The First Thursday in Lent, Worldly Cares, by St. John Chrysostom. Consider the lilies of the field. Hereby Christ teaches us not only to take no thought, but not even to be dazzled at the costliness of men's apparel. Why? Such comeliness is of grass, such beauty of the green herb, or rather, the grass is even more precious than such apparelling. Why then pride thyself on things, whereof the prize rests with the mere plant, with a great balance in its favor? And in the end, after its triumph, it is cast into the oven, and if of things mean and worthless, and of no great use, God hath displayed so great care, how shall he give up thee, of all living creatures the most important? Wherefore then did he make them so beautiful, that he might display his own wisdom and the excellency of his power, that from everything we might learn his glory? For not the heavens only declare the glory of God, but the earth too, and this David declared when he said, "Praise the Lord, ye fruitful trees and all cedars, for some by their fruits, some by their greatness, some by their beauty, send up praise to him who made them. If then to the grass he hath given that which it needs not, how shall he not give unto thee which thou needest? If thou which is the vilest of all things he hath lavishly adorned, and that is doing it not for need, but for munificence, how much more will he honor thee, the most honorable of all things, and matters which are of necessity? Now, when, as you see, he has demonstrated the greatness of God's providential care, so they were in what follows to be rebuked also. Yet even in this he was sparing, laying to their charge not want, but poverty of faith. Thus, if God, saith he, so clothe the grass of the field, much more you, O ye of little faith. Now if for bare necessaries one is not to take thought, what pardon can we deserve, who take thought for things expensive? Or rather, what pardon can they deserve who do even without sleep, that they may take the things of others? Therefore, take no thought, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or wherewithal shall we be clothed? For after all these things do the nations of the world seek. Seest thou how again he hath both shamed them the more, and hath also shown by the way that he had commanded nothing grievous or burdensome? As therefore, when he saith, if ye love them that love you, it is nothing great which ye practice, for the very Gentiles do the same. By mention of the Gentiles he was stirring them up to something greater. So now also he brings them forward to reprove us, and to signify that it is a necessary debt which he is requiring of us. For if we must show forth something more than the scribes or the Pharisees, what can we deserve, who so far from going beyond these, do even abide in the mean estate of the Gentiles, and emulate their littleness of soul? He doth not, however, stop at the rebuke, but having by this reproved and roused them, and shamed them with all strength of expression, by another argument, he also comforts them, saying, for your heavenly Father knoweth that ye need all of these things. He said not, God knoweth, but your Father knoweth, to lead them to a greater hope. For if he be a father, and such a father, he will not surely be able to overlook his children, an extremity of evils, seeing that not even men, being fathers, bear to do so. And he adds along with this yet another argument. Of what kind then is it, that ye have need of them? What he saith is like this, what are these things superfluous that he should disregard them? Yet not even in superfluities did he show himself wanting in regard, in the instance of the grass, but now are these things even necessary. So that what thou considerest a cause of thy being anxious, this I say is sufficient to draw thee from such anxiety. I mean, if thou sayest, therefore I must take thought, because they are necessary. On the contrary, I say, nay, for this self-same reason take no thought, because they are necessary. Since were there superfluities, not even then ought we to despair, but to feel confident about the supply of them. But now that they are necessary, we must no longer be in doubt. For what kind of father is he who can endure to fail in supplying to his children even necessaries, so that for this cause again God will most surely bestow them? For indeed he is the artificer of our nature, and he knoweth perfectly the want thereof. So that neither canst thou say, he is indeed our Father, and the things we seek are necessary, but he knows not that we stand in need of them. For he that knows our nature itself, and was the framer of it, and formed it such as it is, evidently he knows its need also better than thou, who art placed in want of them. It having been his decree that our nature is in such need, he will not therefore oppose himself to what he hath willed, first subjecting it out of necessity to so great want, and on the other hand, depriving it of what it wants, and of absolute necessaries. Let us not therefore be anxious, for we shall gain nothing by it, but tormenting ourselves. For whereas he gives both when we take thought, and when we do not, and more of the two when we do not, what dost thou gain by thy anxiety, but to exact of thyself a superfluous penalty? Since one on the point of going to a plentiful feast will not surely permit himself to take thought for food, nor is it he that is walking to a fountain anxious about drink. Therefore, seeing we have a supply more copious than either any fountain or innumerable banquets made ready for the providence of God, let us not be beggars nor little-minded. For together with this, he puts also yet another reason for feeling confidence about such things, saying, Seek ye the kingdom of heaven, and all these things shall be added unto you. Thus, when he had set the soul free from anxiety, then he also made mention of heaven. For indeed, he came to do away with the old things, and to call us to a greater country. Therefore he doth all, to deliver us from things unnecessary, and from our affection for the earth. For this cause he mentioned the heathens also, saying that the Gentiles seek after these things. They, whose whole labor is for the present life, who have no regard for the things to come, nor any thought of heaven. But to you, not these present are chief things, but other than these. For we were not born to this end, that we should eat and drink and be clothed, but that we might please God and attain unto the good things to come. Therefore, as things here are secondary in our labor, so also in our prayers let them be secondary. Therefore he said, Seek ye the kingdom of heaven, and all these things shall be added unto you. And he said not, Shall be given, but shall be added, that thou mightest learn that the things present are no great part of his gifts, compared with the greatness of the things to come. Accordingly, he doth not bid us so much as ask for them, but while we ask for other things, to have confidence, as though these also were added to those. Seek then the things to come, that thou wilt receive the things present also. Seek not the things that are seen, that thou shalt surely attain unto them. Yea, for it is unworthy of thee to approach thy Lord for such things. And thou, who oughtest to spend all thy zeal and thy care for those unspeakable blessings, dost greatly disgrace thyself by consuming it on the desire of transitory things. How then, saith one, did he not bid us to ask for bread? Nay, he added, daily, and to this again this day, which came thing in fact he doth here also. For he said not, Take no thought, but Take no thought for the morrow, at the same time both affording us liberty and fastening our soul on those things that are more necessary for us. For to this end he also bade us ask even those, not as though God needed reminding by us, but that we might learn that by his help we accomplish whatever we do accomplish, and that we might be made more his own by our continual prayer for these things. Seest that thou hast been this again, he would persuade them that they shall surely receive the things present. For he that bestows the greater, much more will he give the less. For, not for this end, saith he, did I tell you not to take thought, nor to ask that ye should suffer distress and go about naked, but in order that ye might be in abundance of these things also. And this you see was suited above all things to attract them unto him. So that like and as in almsgiving, when deterring them from making a display to men, he won upon them chiefly by promising to furnish them with it more liberally. For thy Father, saith he, who seeth in secret, shall reward thee openly. Even so here also, in drawing them off from seeking these things, this in his persuasive topic, that he promises to bestow it on them, not seeking it in greater abundance. Thus to this end, saith he, do I bid thee not seek, not that thou mayest not receive, but that thou mayest receive plentifully, that thou mayest receive in the fashion thou becomest thee, with the profit which thou oughtest to have, that thou mayest not be taking thought and distracting thyself in anxiety about these. Render thyself unworthy both of these and of the things spiritual, that thou mayest not undergo unnecessary distress, and again fall away from that which is set before thee. Take therefore no thought for the morrow, for sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof, that is to say, the affliction and the bruising thereof. Is it not enough for thee to eat thy bread in the sweat of thy face? Why add the further affliction that comes of anxiety, when thou art on the point to be delivered henceforth even from the former toils? By evil here he means not wickedness, far from it, but affliction, and trouble, and calamities, much as in another place he also saith, Is there evil in a city which the Lord hath done? Not meaning rapines, nor injury, nor anything like these, but the scourges which are born from above. And again, I, saith he, make peace and create evil. This then is his meaning here also, when he saith, Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. For nothing so pains the soul as carefulness and anxiety. Thus did Paul also, when urging to celibacy, give counsel, saying, I would have you without carefulness. Mark his tender care also, how he surpasses the affection of any father. This I command, saith he, for nothing else but that I may deliver you from superfluous anxieties. For even if today thou hast taken thought for tomorrow, thou wilt also have to take thought again tomorrow. Why then? What is our labor? Why force the day to receive more than the distress which is allotted to it, and together with its own troubles add to it also the burden of the following day, and this when there is no chance in of thy lightening the other by the addition so taking place, but thou art merely to exhibit thyself as courting superfluous troubles. Nevertheless, after so many grave words we take thought for these things, but for the things in heaven no longer. Rather we have reversed his order on either fighting against his saying, For mark, seek ye not the things present, saith he, at all, but we are seeking these things forever. Seek the things in heaven. But those things we seek not so much as for a short hour, but according to the greatness of the anxiety we display about the things of the world, and the carelessness we entertain in things spiritual, or rather even much greater. But this doth not prosper forever, neither can this be forever.